I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of time. We become a part of time.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. Well, I think we've got an interesting show in store for you tonight, and we're going to be talking about why spirituality, a preference over religion. We'll be talking about some perceptions and ideas from the Andromedans and the Pleiadians concerning a religion, and how this affects you big time in these interesting times that we're living. And before we get into that and a number of other topics, I'd like to kick off the program in the usual manner by having a little bit of Japa Yoga. And if you're new to ET Yoga, Japa Yoga is a branch of yoga that deals with a little bit of mantra repetition. And in this case, it's the Hari Om mantra, and it can be used as a form of meditation. So if you play back the archive of tonight's program, this can serve as a meditation. So if the guys in the booth would play that short clip now, that would be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Hari.
Hari Hari. Hari Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Hari Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari Hari
Om.
Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari Om
Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari
Om Hari 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 Om Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om,
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari
Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om,
Hari Om, Hari Om,
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om,
Hari Om.
Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari 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 Om
Hari 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 Om
Hari 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 Om
Hari 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 Om Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari Om Hari Om
Om
Hari Om Hari Om
Om
Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari Om Hari Om
Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om.
Yes, that was Sri Swami Satchidananda, founder of the Integral Yoga Institutes. He's one of my spiritual teachers, and That was a clip from back in the 1970s. And if you're a new listener to ET Yoga, you should know that this program is basically dedicated to the whole concept of self-realization. And yoga, in its real meaning, means union of you and your higher self. And I've been very fortunately blessed, but I have two great teachers that were in physical form, Sri Swami Satchidananda and Paramahansa Yogananda. And I also consider Sri Ramana Maharshi also one of my teachers, because it was by doing his technique, the Who Am I technique, that I had my first spiritual experiences. And much appreciation and gratitude to these great beings. I'd like to now give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate, is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And if you're a new listener to ET Yoga, you should also know that I applaud your efforts to distance yourself from mainstream medical and big pharma as much as humanly possible. And that's in keeping with the idea of creating excellent health and maintaining it, and also dealing with issues as they arise. And it's basically from a premise that there are a multitude of natural plants and herbs and an amazing world that we live in that can help you with all kinds of situations. And I really do truly appreciate those people who emailed me and basically with appreciation for the fact that I try to point people in the direction of the natural path as much as possible. I'd like to also, at the beginning of this program, share with you something I shared, I don't know, many years ago on ET Yoga. It was the original Lord's Prayer is discovered in the Dead Sea Scrolls. I think you might find it quite interesting. And you also find it interesting to note that this was printed in a book called UFO from the Pleiades, about the Billy Meier story. If you don't know about Billy Meier, M-E-I-E-R, amazing, amazing story. And he's been confirmed as an actual contactee of extraterrestrials, specifically the Pleiadians, by a number of very positive sources. And when I first read that book, that would have been back in the 1970s, some of the information in there clearly had to have come from off-planet sources. And this is the original Lord's Prayer. My Spirit Almighty, my Spirit who is all-knowing, almighty, and all-loving in me, your presence be sanctified. Your presence confirms to me your controlling power over all matters concerning myself. May your wisdom become conscious to me. May your power be extended in the consciousness of my thoughts in order to enable me to apply all truth, wisdom, and love, peace, and freedom given to and acquired by me and all mankind. May your power be extended in me on earth as well as in heaven. May your power become effective in me in all material as well as spiritual aspect. Please furnish me with all I need for living each day. Please give me all I need for my material as well as my spiritual life, and development for you are almighty, so that I acknowledge my errors, so that I may recognize my faults and eliminate them, since they hinder me in my way of evolution. Please do not lead me into temptation, but to right decision. Please do not let me make error by material and wrong thinking, or become dependent on dogma and will to believe. For you are in me as power and wisdom for eternity. May I become conscious of your almighty forces inside me all the time. And that's from the book UFO from the Pleiades. And that would be a translation, of course, as best we could make it in English. Should also point out that it was about that time in the early 70s when I was also presented with the idea of extraterrestrials in the form of a book called Bringers of the Dawn, and it was written by Barbara Marciniak. Since that time, I've kind of called her book one of the basic texts of extraterrestrials. It's free online. I highly recommend that you check it out. It's an excellent book, and I've followed Barbara Marciniak and her works ever since. In fact, I think the most recent book I read of hers is called The Path of Self-Empowerment. And she has many, many books, and I've probably read 7 or 8 of them. And highly recommend her. It was also about that time that I had a close encounter with the UFO, close enough so that I could throw a baseball and hit the craft. So it kind of all kind of fit together at that time. And also, I became very impressed with the Seth material, that's S-E-T-H, that's that came from Jane Roberts. And if you don't know about the Seth material, I can give you a few points of that relate to that information. For example, Seth would say that physical reality arises from consciousness, not the other way around. We create our own reality. We're not at the mercy of a disjointed deity or subconscious. We are multidimensional beings, more than our physical bodies. Time and space are dimensional illusions we jointly create and by which we tacitly agree to abide. At the core of our being, we reside in a realm in which time and space does not exist. We are, in essence, creative spiritual beings having an earthly experience. The fate of each of us is in our own hands. We have multiple, perhaps infinite, life experiences. Problems not faced in this life will be faced in another. We cannot blame God, society, or our parents for misfortunes, since before this physical life, we chose the circumstances in which we would be born and the challenges that could best bring about our development. We form physical matter as effortlessly and unselfconsciously as we breathe. Telepathically, we are all aware of the mass ideas from which we form our overall conception of physical reality. You create your reality according to your beliefs and expectations. Realize that your physical experience and environment is the materialization of your beliefs. And where do we hear about that a lot from is a lot of the, what I call, relevant and accurate channelings from a lot of positive ET groups, because at the core of that information is the concept that thought creates or beliefs create. And if you're a follower of Abraham and Esther Hicks, or Jerry Hicks and Esther Hicks, who channel Abraham, You'll know that that information is very closely connected with the ideas presented by Daryl Anka, who channels Bashar, B-A-S-H-A-R. And I find that all that information really cross-connects. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the ET Yoga listening audience just for being you, because you're already making the optimum difference just by being you. And others become aware of the difference you're already making when you're doing your passion. And I'm going to expand upon that point a little bit, because I don't just say it just for the fun of saying it. I'm going to share with you a little bit of information from Bashar. He says, your vibration radiates. There is now on your planet what you might call a new book, relatively speaking. Some of you may be familiar with it. Some of you may not. Though we rarely recommend, we suggest that relative to the conversation we are having right now, you get it and read it. If you ponder its concepts, you will understand quite clearly what kind of impact each and every single one of you can have. That book is called The Heart's Code. The Heart's Code talks about the re-recognition that your heart has intelligence and that it actually communicates to every other heart, literally, electromagnetically. All your hearts right now are literally talking to one another. I'm not making this up. It's not just a philosophical idea or a euphemism or a metaphor. Your hearts are talking to each other in electromagnetic pulses right now. You're sitting in each other's, immersed in each other's expanding heart bubbles. Listen to this, think about this, picture this. Give energy to this, and you will see what kind of impact you have all the time. Every single beat of your heart sends out an electromagnetic 360-degree spherical bubble at the speed of light, an electromagnetic pulse 186,300 miles per second. That means instantly, nearly every single one of those bubbles pulsates around and through the entire planet from every single being on it. You are immersed in each other's heartbeats. When you begin to talk to your own heart, you will know how to talk to others, sometimes without saying a thing with your mouth or your brain. But you, each and every one of you, have been experiencing a war between your brains, your hearts, and your bodies. It's time to allow them their due, to allow them their own unique communication and to function as a triad to work together harmoniously. The balancing of the heart, body, and mind is a matter of letting everything do its job and not more than its job. In that sense, the mind relates to the heart by doing the tasks that are specifically the domain and the talent of the mind, taking the heart's energy and applying it in reality in ways that allow you to have thoughts. But these thoughts need to be in agreement and in harmony with the heart's knowingness and the body's sensing. Otherwise, you are discordant. For example, the heart can feel something that the mind will think is not in the best interest of the mind, but it's up to the mind to accept the love from the heart, and then the mind will know how to fall into place properly. I'll give you an analogy of a visual idea that is representative of the balancing of the body, mind, and heart. The body is the colors of the spectrum, the seven colors of your visible spectrum of light. The brain is black and white, and the heart is a combination of everything. The body, the mind, and the heart each has its own way of receiving information. The body senses vibration or resonance. That's how it gets information. It senses. The brain gets its information by thinking and processing. The heart gets its information by knowing, feeling. Now, all of this contains resonance and vibration, of course, but it is different expressions of it. The heart can also be of assistance in the healing of the body. We recommend that you access the literature of research to know that there is intelligence and memory and energy and communication that comes from the heart as well as from the brain. By getting in touch with the intelligence of the heart and learning how to listen with and speak from and hear the dialogue of the heart, This will go perhaps even further than anything towards healing. So listen to your heart and know what your heart tells you, and when you find in your heart that you are whole, your body will be whole as well. And that's an excerpt from Bashar as channeled by Daryl Anka. And I might also add information if you are not aware that, and this is from Greg Braden, one of my favorite scientists. He says, our heart produces the fields that change our world and changes our body. Beliefs create the electrical waves. Beliefs create magnetic waves. What you believe about yourself, what you believe about me, what you believe about your world, about your relationships to God, about peace on this earth, is creating what is happening on this earth. Right now, beliefs change our physical world. Beliefs change matter. And that's from Greg Braden and Language of the Divine Matrix. Might also point out that the heart generates the body's most powerful and most extensive rhythmic electromagnetic field. Compared to the electromagnetic field produced by the brain, the electrical component of the heart's field is about 60 times greater in amplitude and permeates every cell in the body. The magnetic component is approximately 5,000 times stronger than the brain's magnetic field and can be detected several feet away from the body with sensitive magnetometers. And I might also point out that because it's our thoughts and our emotions and our intentions and our definitions that create our outer reality, that our outer reality is a perfect reflection of that, because you can't experience anything in 3D reality in this holographic universe unless you're a frequency match for it. And it so turns out that it is the energy from the heart that, because of its strong nature, and that interreacts with the outer forces that really create your reality. So it's that emotional energy from the heart. And I think this has only really come about in recent science. The morphogenetic field is what interacts with the heart that creates our version of reality. And thus at the core of ET Yoga is the whole idea of a spiritual quest that's based on self-realization, and spiritual being the key word here. Now, before I get into some of the extraterrestrial perspectives, I want to just give a brief synopsis of what my personal experience told me about why I prefer spirituality over religion. And the main fundamental point is clearly that once you realize that there are higher levels of consciousness and you have the ability to attain them, that is the true baptism. That is what's called the planting of the seed. And it has to do with spirit. It has nothing to do with religion. There may be a lot of nice people that are involved in religion, but maybe there are others that are not so nice, and especially at some of the higher levels. And clearly, to me, the concept of self-realization is the foundational aspect of spirituality. And that concept does not exist in religion. And so thus, it became obvious to me that I was not interested in having a middleman between me and my higher self or source energy or whatever concept or definition you like to use to define spirit. As Swami Satchidananda used to say, spirit is infinite. can't really be defined. He used to say, as many minds, as many gods, because it's kind of like the ocean. If you take a cup to the ocean takes the shape of the cup. And similarly, when you experience spirituality or spirit, that information takes the shape of your mind. So I used to think of it in, as a concept that we're all kind of like thoughts in the mind of God. So that's kind of my starting point with after I've had several spiritual experiences, their religion just wasn't even a logical thing to be involved with. Certainly some of the information from the Pleiadians, as channeled by Barbara Marciniak, would state that religion was created to divide and conquer the human species, and it's all about fear and control. And I'm first going to share with you some information that was compiled by D. Finney, F-I-N-N-E-Y. And it kind of gives a kind of a general background of this topic. And he states that apparently the Alpha Draconian created the primate race, which was first brought to Mars and then to Earth. The primate race was then tinkered with by many other different extraterrestrial races, 21 other races, resulting in the primate race having been modified 22 times. And this primate race eventually became Homo sapiens, who we are on a physical level. We used to have 12 strands of DNA. 10 strands were taken out by a group from Orion in order to control us and hold us back. The reason being that they found out on a soul level that we humans are part of a group of energies that they know of as the Patal. The Patal created life forms that could evolve on their own with free expression. The Draconians created races that function as a natural resource for their pleasure. When the reptilians brought religion to the Sumerians, they created a gender base for a gender-minded population. Then they instituted fear to control the mind patterns cleverly. They created a religion based on a female god-goddess control system. The male god was called Nimrod, and the female goddess Semiramis. That's S-E-M-I-R-A-M-U-S. They eventually became Osiris and Isis of Egypt and Apollo and Athena of Greece. In China, the remnants of Lemuria created a male-dominant empire system. Here, the male emperor would always have an empress. The people were told that the emperor and empress were descendants of the sun god. The symbol of the emperor was the dragon, another reptilian figure. The Chinese reptilian religion spread across Eastern Asia, while the Sumerian version meandered through Central and Northern Africa and Asia. The spread of these religions was intentionally controlled from the underground reptilian population, primarily centered under Tibet. The reptilians were aided by beings from Sirius B, who developed the Buddhist philosophies. In India, at the same time, the Lemurian reptilian refugees created a caste system that was a direct replica of the reptilian hierarchy. This Indian reptilian culture remained localized writing and the ancient Vedas and building temples to the various reptilian gods. Currently in the world, we now have the new reptilian religion of Christianity. It fills the people with fear of a judgmental God and tells them that unless they believe that the truth of all that is can be found in one book or belief systems, they are going to hell or will experience other extremely unpleasant consequences. We also know that Constantine in Rome in about 325 AD basically rewrote the then-known Christianity, much to the dismay of mystics and true Gnostics at the time, who were then labeled as heretics. So, I guess, you know, I'm presenting this information for your discernment, and, you know, you can use what you can use, and what you can't use. I should also point out that sometimes I do check in with a channeled entity called the Cosmic Awareness. And Cosmic Awareness states that the composite Jesus made from different religions was promoted in such a way by the Roman Empire that it became an outstanding symbol for the Piscean Age. Jesus, as presented by the Roman Empire, was made up of elements of the Krishna religion in Rome, the Helios, H-E-L-I-O-S religion, or that which worshipped the sun, and of various other religious sects in Rome, which were all brought together in a way creating a universal or Catholic, which means universal religious order, that would be accepted as the official Roman religion. They first rejected the name of Zeus because of Greek origin and ended up choosing the name Jesus, which meant neither he nor she. Jesus was based on multiple beings. Apollonius, A-P-O-L-L-O-N-I-U-S, of Tiana, and Jesus the Nazarene, son of the carpenter, and two other beings. The quote from Seth stated that Jesus was not crucified, but that a deluded, drugged person who believed he was Jesus was crucified, and three persons were involved in the Christ image. And also from the Palladian information from Barbara Marciniak, channeled from a group of Palladian collective beings, assert that the dark forces have advanced holography and sometimes put holographic inserts into our time track. They state that such a crucifixion was actually done as an insert. And it should also be noted that Jesus is not Christ. Christ is not a person, but refers to the Christos consciousness, which is the fourth frequency density level. And according to Bashar, he says, recognize that the idea, as if it has been translated in your language, is usually interpreted as Christ being the Son of God, whereas Jesus Christ actually referred to himself as the Son of Man. Look in your own Bible. He calls himself the Son of Man. Do understand that the writings of what was verbalized by Jesus of Nazareth were not begun to be committed to paper until approximately 57 years after the death of the physical Jesus. Someone adds, you talked about the Bible being misinterpreted through the years. Yes, every single written idea contains some misinterpretation where it regards placing ritual around the idea of what happened. And also I would like to share with you information that a last name is not given from the channeling. I can imagine why. But his name was Chris, and it was done in 2017, and the information pretty much cross-references with that of Alex Collier, an Andromedan contactee. And it goes like this. As far as the Savior scenario is concerned, I have been told it has been put into our belief systems to disempower us. Now, this is so touchy, so I'm not going to share with you, I'm just going to share with you what they've said, being the Andromedans, and I'm going to pick on the New Testament And I apologize again. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just sharing information that they have given me. This is their perspective. Most of the Old Testament, especially Genesis, consists of pirated versions of Chaldean texts that were constructed in 651 BC. The being that we have been taught is one person, Moses, is in fact two people. One of these people was Moah, M-O-A-H, a Chaldean chief, and the other one was Prince Sesostris, S-E-S-O-T-R-E-S, in Egypt. The authors in 651 BC put the two together and created a composite character, so it is not what it appears to be. When we get to the New Testament, the nine epistles of Paul were apparently brought from India by Apollonius of Tyana. The four Gospels were obtained by Hariman Armadi in India. They were Hindu in their original form, written by Apollonius, who was also known as Paul the Apostle. The being we know as Jesus did in fact live. He was crucified through the palms, but according to the Andromedans, he did not die, but lived out the rest of his life and died at Masada in 64 AD. They also say that the last version of the Gospels and the Epistles were translated by Euphilius, a Catholic bishop, and that the original books in their original form are at the University of Uppsala, that's U-P-S-A-L, and that they are called the Codex Argentinus. The original handwriting is in Sumerian. What about Adam and Eve? It was a tribe, not just two beings, according to the Andromedans. We received the Cliff Notes version of it. Can you be specific in what the Andromedans' viewpoint is on Christianity? Well, there were several characters in history with the name Yeshua, translated loosely as Jesus. There is Yeshua ben Joseph. Basically, the Catholic Church created a composite character, because at the time they were expending a lot of resources putting out religious wars. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but like many things, it got perverted. Yeshua ben Joseph was a Jewish rabbi who lived from 70 BC to 9 BC. He was apparently crucified at some point for being a thief. Prior to that, there was a man by the name of Rabbi Hallel, H-A-L-L-E-L, who apparently died in 100 BC. Rabbi Hallel was called the Great Teacher. Many Christians are led to believe that a man named Jesus was called this, when in fact it was Rabbi Hallel. Now, what happened was that the New Testament composite character of Jesus the Christ was created by the Council of Nicaea, N-I-C-E-A. Most of the words that are attributed to this composite character referred to colloquially as Jesus were in fact spoken by Apollonius of Tyana, that's A-P-O-L-L-O-N-I-U-S of Tyana, T-Y-A-N-A, who the Bible calls Paul of Tarsus. Because Rome had their armies scattered all over the place, and all these wars were over the subject of religion, what the Council of Nicaea decided to do is essentially create a state religion. So what they did was combine the religious and the religions of the East and West, both of which were concerned with the sun, S-U-N, worship. Those in the West worshipped Hesos, H-E-S-O-S, also called Hes. Those in the East that worshipped the sun worshipped Krishna, which in Greek is called Christos. The very first Bible that was put together was in 325 A.D. They took some books that Apollonius of Tyana had brought back from Burma, called the Codes of the Initiates, which concerned themselves with man's relationship to the seasons, among other things, and containing lessons that were handed down to those particular holy men in India during that particular period in history. The Codes of the Initiates allegedly contained works that were spoken by Krishna. The very first Bible was called the Helios Biblios, which means the sun book. Question, when was the Helios Biblios assembled? Between 324 and 355 AD by the Council of Nicaea under Emperor Constantine the Great. Then they slowly developed a god, a personage, to replace the sun, and slowly changed the books, disposing of the material detailing reincarnation and many of the other teachings. They changed meanings, and every scribe that worked on this thing kept changing things as belief systems were revised with the prevailing times. Question, how about things ascribed to the historical Jesus, such as the Sermon on the Mount? The exact words ascribed to the historical Jesus with reference to the Sermon on the Mount were found in a Turkish museum authored by a Greek senator in 64 AD. Question, then who was the healer in this whole scenario? That was Apollonius of Tyana, who the Catholic Church referred to as the Antichrist, despite the fact that he was also became known as Paul of Tarsus, mainly because he encouraged rebellion against the Roman tyranny. And Yeshua ben Joseph, he was of the royal line, but he tried to create rebellion against Roman tyranny as well. Now there was another Yeshua? Question, yes, another Yeshua. Yes, it's a very common name then in Judea. He was a rabbi who was also called a rebel of sorts. He died in Masada in 64 AD, and his presence in Masada was why Masada was attacked. His name was Yeshua Malathiel. That's M-A-L-A-T-H-I-E-L. The bottom line is there is no Jesus Christ in history at all. It was a composite character, and history reveals this fact. Question. Now, Robert Morningsky revealed that the specific crucifixion that involved the Yeshua was a mock crucifixion and that the person did not really die because he was given a herbal mixture to simulate death, and the Barabbas, that's B-A-R-A-B-B-A-S, was in fact the son of the Yeshua concerned there. Answer, yes. If you take the name Barabbas, which is a two-word name, not Barabbas, as in the biblical product of the Roman Church, and you go back to the ancient Hebrew, it means son of the teacher or son of the master. Question, so who was Barabbas? Answer, Yeshua Malathiel, M-E-L-E-T-H-I-E-L. Question, his son? Answer, yes. And from that grew the lineage in France. Question, the lineage in France? That is where Alex Christopher's book, Pandora's Box, picks up the trail. The so-called bloodline of the Christ that related to the mission of the Templars. Answer, that's right. It related not to Yeshua Malathiel himself, who died in Masada in 64 AD, but to his son, Barabbas, who survived and went to France. Question, this is also connected with the blue bloods and extraterrestrial genetics? Answer, that's exactly right. Question, so Yeshua Malathiel was a blue blood? Answer, yes, he was. Once he was connected to the house of David, and if you go all the way back through time, through David, and you get to Moses, who was a human extraterrestrial half-breed. Question, so it was Yeshua Malathiel who was involved in the cross scenario? Answer, I don't know for sure, but the Essenes were herbalists and knew how to mix potions and knew about this kind of thing. Of course, the real secrets about all of this lie in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Question, which the Israeli government have locked up, at least most of them, and will only let a few select people see a few of them? Answer, yes. By the Israeli and the Roman Church, because what the Dead Sea Scrolls show, according to the Andromedans, are that Christianity and Judaism were really one thing, one religion. And they also tell of the true story of who Yeshua was, as we have spoken about this here. Question, Yeshua Malathiel? Answer, right. Rabbi Weiss, in the 1950s and 60s, did an extensive study of the death warrants and death certificates of those who were crucified during that time period, as the Romans kept records. And the only Yeshua listed as being crucified was a man coincidentally named Yeshua Malathiel, who was listed as a traitor and a thief. Mary of the house of Magdalene was the wife of Yeshua Malathiel. She came from a very well-to-do family who raised doves for sacrifice put on by the Pharisees at the temple. I think the book Holy Grail talks a little about that too. The Jewish tradition was at that time that any man 13 years of age who was a rabbi must take a wife and have children. That was the law. Question, how did the crucifixion arise with Yeshua Malathiel and his son Barabbas? Answer, well, the story behind this is that they took Barabbas because they knew that the father Yeshua would come after the son. The story goes on to say that a ransom was paid and they did a mock crucifixion in order to hide the fact of a payoff to the Romans. Malathiel did not leave the area. He continued to do what he did and died in Masada. There is apparently a scroll which is in the possession of the Russians that proves this, and the son, Barabbas, was escorted to France with the rest of the family. Question. So presuming that somewhere along the line, Christians or Jesus would read this material, what would you say to them if they feel concerned by it? Answer, well, all I would say is that true history does not support the proof that a Jesus Christ lived. It does prove that Apollonius of Tyana was real. And the other thing I would say is you've been duped. There is no middleman between you and the Creator, and your relationship is directly with the Creator. Question. Of course, this is why Gnosticism has been so suppressed throughout history. Answer. Yes. These churches exist only because people believe in them and support them financially. If you take that away and say, well, my relationship is with the Creator, I don't need a middleman, then there's no need for you. Let's face it, the church is politics and a form of government. The Andromedans share very much the same viewpoint as some of the Pleiadian groups, that all religions on the planet were forms of government, and they don't see any difference between government and politics, or power broking, in their perspective. I mean, people used to have to pay priests in order to assure their place in heaven. Question, are there any religious systems on this planet that are at all beneficial? Answer. There are two religious systems they say have been beneficial, and they were the original form of Buddhism and the original form of Shinto. That's Shinto. All the other stuff is designed to hold you back and control you. That is their perspective. So I guess the bottom line here is whether or not Jesus was a composite character. In all religion, the concept of self-realization doesn't exist. So regardless of your opinion on that particular point, still there's no middleman required. The church and the Bible were definitely related as the middleman and the clergy to control humanity, and they still have a goal of a one-world religion. And it's based on fear, promising everlasting life, when in point of fact, we now know that if you exist now, you've always existed at one time or another in some form or another. So in essence, we already have everlasting life. The true baptism is not that as portrayed by the religions, but rather in spiritual terms, it's called the planting of the seed, which is the realization that there are higher levels of consciousness and that we have the ability to attain them. Spirituality is about spirit and personal freedom, where religion is more about guilt and sin. And by the way, being born is, to me, is not a sin. It is the process of higher self splicing off a part of itself to create an incarnation as a means of gathering experience in lower dimension. Clearly, the point has been made of why spirituality over religion, but the issue doesn't even resolve itself at death of the physical body, as the archons have control of the reincarnation grid. Reincarnation is a fact that all self-realized beings are aware of, and if you do some research, you'll find that in 325 AD, the Romans basically reinvented Christianity, and we know today that Caesar Constantine and the First Council of Nicaea was established to do this task as a method to control the population. And even Paramahansa Yogananda has stated that the concept of reincarnation used to be part of early Christian belief, but was removed. From his book, Autobiography of a Yogi, it says that the early Christian church accepted the doctrine of reincarnation, which was expounded by the Gnostics and by numerous church fathers, including Clement of Alexandria, the celebrated Origen, both 3rd century, and St. Jerome, 5th century. The doctrine was first declared a heresy in A.D. 553 by the Second Council of Constantinople. So, because the Archons and the Anunnaki have control of the reincarnation grid, they basically set up a soul trap. And this is why I'm bringing up this topic, is because I think it's really important for people to be aware that you should probably be checking out Wes Penray on YouTube, because this is the kind of thing that you need to be prepared for after the death experience, because it's a big deal. And according to Barbara Marciniak, unbeknownst to a lot of priests, when they during the last rites, when they pass the cross over you, it shuts down all your chakras, and a lot of people end up in an Anunnaki recycling center. So these are big-time issues that affect us, and it probably won't affect the majority of the listeners in our audience, because there will be a split in an ascension process. But if you happen to die before that takes place, then I think you really need to be prepared, and that's the intent of why I brought up this topic tonight, because it takes some practice mentally. I mean, if you should also see Janeway versus the Archons from the Cosmic Voyager YouTube, because these Archons have the ability to impersonate characters like your family members or a Jesus figure. So it's very important for you to tap into this information. I'd like to now wish my audience my sincere best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And in closing, share with you the Who Am I technique, where you place your full attention in the center of your forehead and become that spot, and then ask the question, who am I? And you can do that once or a few times, whatever is comfortable. And then when you've got your full attention and you become that spot, you state the following. I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot. What spot?
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.